It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. You know, our biggest dog park in Anchorage seems to be Chugach State Park. On any sunny day on the trails into the mountains, you'll encounter many, many dogs and their people enjoying the space and getting the exercise they both need. If you love your dog, of course, you want to take him or her to do the things you love. But there are outdoor hazards for dogs just as there are for people, and there are other people and animals who may not like your dog, and even special risks like traps. On today's show, we're going to talk about enjoying the outdoors with your dog, fun stuff you can do, what to be careful of, and how to avoid being a jerk around non-dog people. And I've got three very much dog people in the studio with me. We've got a great panel, and I think we're going to have a really fun discussion. And then I'm the stand-in for the non-dog people, even though I do have a dog. My friends know that I'm not the sort of super doggy type. So for all of those listeners out there who are irritated by dogs, I'll be asking the tough questions. Our panel is Matisse Riley, who has a nonprofit called Straw for Dogs that takes care of outdoor dogs and helps people be better dog owners. Thanks for being with us, Matisse.
Thank you.
And Robin Langley of Alaska Dog Sports, a dog trainer who does, sounds like, just about every dog sport there is out there. Thanks for being with us, Robin.
Thanks for having me.
And Claire Ross, who is the president of the Ski Touring Club?
Yeah, outgoing president.
Outgoing president of the Ski Touring Club. And you have a couple of huskies that you do sort of everything with.
Yeah, a husky and a blue heeler mix.
So what do ski jurors do in the summertime? Do you like have to do like the Nordic skiers do all the gym work and stuff like that?
Yeah, we go up to Eagle Glacier to train the dogs, like the APU ski team. No, we have to keep the dogs active year-round, so we take them mountain biking, hiking, whatever we can to keep them in shape, too, so they're ready to pull come November when the snow falls.
And you even have, it sounds like you have a summer ski-during event, which I imagine they're pulling you on roller skates, but I guess that's not what you do.
On September 14th, we have the Run Rover Run, and it's a dry land race, so you tie your dog up and you run, so it's pretty safe. It's not like ski-joring or roller skiing with a dog attached to you, which is a recipe for disaster.
That would be insane. Yeah. So, it sounds like you've done a lot of stuff with your huskies. Do you feel like there's any preparation or anything special you do, or just throw them in the car and let them out on the trail and whatever happens, happens? I'm just curious as to whether you feel like people need to think about preparing to go out, you know, hiking in Chugach State Park, or if it's just part of being a fun summer day and your dogs are part of your family and that's sort of, don't need to think about it.
Yeah, I feel like this is a confessional show. I need to admit that I have very naughty dogs. And so, yeah, we have to do a lot of preparation to get them out the door. Sometimes my husband will play fetch with them to get them a little bit of that energy out before we go. And then once we get to the trail, even if it's an off-leash area, we'll keep them on leash until we have a good grasp of the area and get past the crowds in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. And then let them off leash and cross our fingers and hope for the best.
Right, because they're suddenly in paradise, right?
I mean, yeah.
That's what the sort of they want to be, is like in this free open space where there's a million things to investigate.
Yeah.
So they take off every direction.
They run around everywhere. Our dogs stick pretty close to us, but the biggest fear is when people who are not dog people are also on the trails and hoping that our dogs don't jump on them. So we actually use the ski jor command on by, which is the best command that I have in the toolbook. Mm-hmm. So if someone's way ahead on the trail and the dogs are getting close to them, we can say on by, and our dogs usually ignore them and go right on by them.
Have you done any like backpacking or multi-day trips with your dogs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do they carry their own weight, or how do they?
Yeah, we do have little doggy backpacks for them, and they carry their food, and we just hope that it stays dry. They go in the rivers.
Because they'll go anywhere, yeah. So how do you determine like what a dog can handle? I mean, it's different from a person, I suppose.
I think our dogs are probably in better shape than us, so they could usually handle what we can handle. We did a 9-mile bike ride into a cabin for Memorial Day, and they still had plenty of energy to burn afterwards.
Yeah. How old are your dogs?
3 and 6.
Okay. So, I mean, they're still in the prime, really in the prime of their life and their fitness.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me turn to Robin Langley. You deal with a lot of dog owners and a lot of different kinds of dogs, and you have your own dogs. Tell us about your dogs.
I have 2 Chesapeake Bay Retrievers. Brownie is 6 and Chewbacca is 4.
Okay. And what kind of stuff do you do that with them?
We do a little bit of everything. We do hiking. We do biking. We do agility, obedience, rally, confirmation, and hunt test work.
Mm-hmm. So. And it sounds like you do some hunting and retrieving and all.
Yes, in the fall we do actually go out and hunt with our dogs. So
these are working dogs, and to, at least yes. to some extent.
Yes, they are. Well, Brownie's not the best. She she doesn't really like dead ducks, but she'll retrieve anything else. So Chewy's our go-to for the actual hunting, but she does come along.
So tell me about what you do at Alaska Dog Sports.
We're an organization that trains all kinds of dogs and people. And, well, I should back up. We actually train the people. We don't train the dogs. We teach you how to train your dog. And most of it is we have a variety of classes, beginner classes, puppy classes, all the way up to the advanced classes. We offer some other classes like Street Smarts that actually Matisse teaches. And that's actually taking your dog out into the real world and practicing what you've learned in our building. Mm-hmm. So that's an extremely helpful class for most people.
What are the most important skills for a dog owner?
My number one absolute you have to have is a good recall. Mm-hmm. That'll save your dog's life at times. So,
especially if you're outdoors and you're
absolutely
on a trail or
whatever, it's the
porcupine
best.
Or,
yes,
yeah.
Porcupine, moose, bear. If they're running off the area, and you might be worried about traps being in the area. If they're running up on another person that you're not sure they're going to like your dog, you can recall your dog back. It's the number one training thing in my book. You know, mm-hmm. for every dog.
So everyone's nodding, but you know what I've noticed is that people feel that their dog, they have good recall and they can call their dog, but that's when the dog wants to come back, right?
Yes.
And if the dog is interested in something, it'll do what it wants to do until it kind of wants to do what you want it to do.
That's true. There was a survey going around the dog community for a while about, you know, how good do you think your recall really is? And they found out that most people that thought they had a 100% recall were really more like 90%. Mm-hmm. And really it's about working up to those distractions and making it considerably harder each time. You know, we offer a reliable recall class, which helps you to get through those harder distractions.
Do you ever run into just dumb dogs that just don't?
Oh, I hate to say that, but occasionally you have dogs that don't quite get it. I don't think a lot of dogs mean to be horrible or bad or anything mm-hmm. else, but a lot of them don't understand the people. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes we have a hard time communicating what we want to the dog, and that's where they get confused, and then they might act bad, but it's because they don't really know what we want.
Right.
So on that note, though, I have run into a few dogs that aren't the sharpest.
Right. Well, and I suppose you probably run into quite a few or maybe more dumb people, in which I might put myself in that category because I sometimes find myself like using long sentences to tell the dog what to do. You know, like 4-syllable words. And I suddenly think, wait a minute, this is a dog. This is not working. I've got it. How do I communicate with this animal?
And, yeah.
And so you have to... That's a really big part of it, isn't it? Getting the person in the right frame of mind.
Yeah, again, that's why we don't train the dogs, we train the people. Mm-hmm. And once you learn more about how to read your dog and other dogs' body language and, you know, really know how to communicate clearly with them, it opens up the doors. It makes things so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably makes it a lot more fun, too.
Yes.
And definitely more fun for other people.
Yes.
Matisse Riley, you started Straw for Dogs because you were concerned about seeing outdoor dogs that were not really being treated as well as they should be?
Sure. There's a lot of gray area between quality caretaking and what's actually considered neglect or abuse. Then so we go in and offer support for the caretakers to improve their own pet's life. Mm-hmm. Offer them dog houses, straw, free behavioral advice if they're having trouble with their dog indoors, house training, that type of thing. We'll offer crates and show them how to use crate training as a way to bring the dog inside as well.
I see. So how do you find your clients or the people that you're going to help out? Because I would think that could be a little sensitive.
Sure, it can be. One thing we have found is that if they contact us themselves, of course, they're that much more invested in working with us to help their pet. We have an application for assistance on our website under the Contact Us header. It's an easy online form. Anyone can fill it out. It can be anonymous if it's a neighbor or something. But we have a lot of caretakers contact us now that we've been doing this for a while on their own. And that's really great because then we can really get somewhere with them and their pets.
Mm-hmm. And So is it mostly people requesting your help or people requesting sort of that you help somebody else that they're aware of?
It started with mostly people requesting us to visit their neighbors. But now that we've gotten more name recognition, we've done a lot of radio, TV kind of stuff just to get out there and sharing our information through animal control. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's
thank
how
you.
I found you.
Awesome. Good to know. Now more people are contacting us. And that's really the idea is that we can work more efficiently and more effectively with a caretaker who's willing to work with us.
And explain the name, Straw for Dogs.
Well, Straw for Dogs just comes from the very simple idea of where do we start with animals outside in Alaska. Bedding, any kind of towels, blankets, that kind of thing gets wet and freezes pretty much immediately, even just from the dog's breath, the condensation, the snow they might pull into their doghouse on their fur. So we start with a basic mushing tip using straw instead of blankets, towels, or a dog bed in a doghouse.
Okay. So, you're an original Alaska local organization, like you just homegrown.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We were a grassroots group of friends and family. Uh-huh. We just started other volunteers that we know through other organizations. We started just collecting free dog houses, refurbishing them, and then offering them for free on Craigslist.
Cool. So I let the other guests talk about their own dogs. Tell us about your dogs.
We have a houseful. We've got three husky mixes. They range in age from 10 to 13. Oh, they're all still quite active. They go for a mile run every day, and then they love to go out in the woods as well. And then we have about a 7-year-old pit bull mix. Mm-hmm. She is getting to like the outdoors more and more. Every year she has more fun outside. The first couple of years she was pretty miserable when we take her on a hike. But we have a whole suitcase she goes with extra dry clothes and bug spray. And
Patty is a princess.
Robin knows Patty.
So this is a spoiled dog. Okay. So do you find that, I mean, is there a difference in what the dogs are capable of?
Absolutely. I think that's a big important point, you know, is that the pit bull doesn't want to go out necessarily in the pouring down rain for a 3-hour hike. The huskies love it.
They always want to go out, right?
They always want to go out. And so we adjust. She might stay home. We might have a friend come over and let her out if we're going to be gone all day or all night, and depending on the weather. Or we'll just bring a lot of extra dry clothes and a sleeping bag for her.
Well, not all dogs can stay warm in the winter, right?
Absolutely. And she really has no hair. And a double-coated dog like a husky is much better suited to being outdoors than a single-coated dog. Or she's some spots bald on her belly.
So should dogs like that just not go? And anybody weigh in on this, but should a dog like that not go on a wintertime skiing trip or something? Or do you put a coat on them? Or how do you handle that?
We do put coats on them. It depends on the weather. So, and it depends on where we're going. If we're going to go someplace short, then we're going to be inside and warm. We'll bring her. If it's going to be a long day and, you know, there might not be a place for her to warm up, we might leave her at home and take the other guys.
I think it also depends on your dog. I mean, if you know your dog, you know, I have a Chesapeake Bay Retriever, or well, actually, I used to have a Maltese that loved to go hiking in the rain, but hated it in the heat. So, you know, I think if you know your dog and know what they're capable of, you can make a good decision on whether to take them.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about bringing your dog along. And we have three guests in the studio who are enthusiastic advocates for this activity. You were just hearing Robin Langley, who's with Alaska Dog Sports, and Matisse Riley with Straw for Dogs, and Claire Ross with the Anchorage Ski Drawing Club. Is it Anchorage or Alaska Ski Drawing Club?
Anchorage. There is a Fairbanks Club as well.
Yeah. Okay, good. She had to think for a minute. So I'm remembering there used to be a musher who made a thing of trying to mush poodles to Fairbanks. And the poodles could pull the sled, but I'm not sure if they had really the fur to be happy in the wintertime. Claire, I mean, what kind of dogs are best for ski touring?
Well, of course, the huskies. The German short hair pointers are really popular now because they are so strong, long-legged, big-chested, although they are not winter dogs, so they have to wear coats a lot of time. It's hard to keep them warm. So I always like a good old husky mix. Although my best friend has a 8-pound poodle cocker spaniel mix, and she's ski-jored with that dog sometimes too. The dog doesn't really pull, but kind of runs with her, and that dog's pretty energetic.
You need a lot of them, I would think.
Yeah, to get to Fairbanks, you might need about 40.
So how can you tell if your dog is too cold? Anybody weigh in on that?
Good question.
You know, when my dog Azula, who's a heeler mix and not as well suited for winter, when she was a puppy, we'd keep her kennel inside, and we kept them outside during the day, but we'd take them for a walk every morning. And on the days that it was really cold, she'd run into her kennel, her crate, and just stay there for the rest of the morning. And so then we'd know it was too cold for her to go outside. And if mm-hmm. she didn't go into her crate, then we'd put them outside. Our limit is usually about 5 degrees. If it's below 5, we usually leave them inside for the day.
Mm-hmm. Do and anybody can jump in on this. What other kinds of things? I know mushers will use booties, and you see sometimes dogs wearing sweaters and coats and stuff. And
I think the booties are used more so that the ice crystals don't form in the paws. It's not uh-huh. necessarily because it's cold. It's so they don't get the damage on the feet. I've tried booties on my dogs. They refuse to wear them. But a lot of times, you know, with smaller dogs or with dogs with sensitive feet, you'll see them picking them up if the ground is too cold. You can check their ear tips and make sure that they're not turning gray or, you know, getting really sensitive. Those are the two places I look. I don't know where else you would check.
Shaking, I have seen dogs shake, actually, like a person would, dogs who are living outside without proper way to keep warm.
Yeah, that's sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's something that I would look for if that was your own dog, of course. That would be something to look for. The booties, I found some great luck with those plasticky ones. Have you seen them?
Really?
The whoopee cushions? Yeah, because actually we a lot of them wear them. They do seem to get cold contact, my guys do. Mm-hmm. If it's cold on the pavement, they don't like that. So when it gets really cold, they all will wear booties, and those plasticky ones stay on great. Yeah. I just started using them last year.
Any weather issues during the summertime? I mean, for people, we have to worry about hypothermia in the summer if it's wet and, you know, 50 degrees.
In the fall with duck hunting, especially, you know, if we're retrieving in the water, we do have neoprene vests for our dogs. And depends on, you know, if it's September versus November, what we use. Chesapeakes are obviously well suited to cold working conditions, so they do well. But mm-hmm. if you have a lab with a shorter coat, you'll definitely want to work with, you know, if you're using a thicker or thinner neoprene. And that's basically just a chest cover that keeps them warmer.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some other safety issues. There have been issues with trappers putting traps out, and dogs obviously are just as interested in whatever's in that trap as anyone else. Any of you want to weigh in on, like, that concern? Is there anything you can do about that?
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has a fabulous handout and video that clearly explains how easy it is to free your dog from the trap. I think the key is maintaining calmness, because, you know, you start to panic and your dog's flailing around. And if you can calm down, the dog can calm down, and it's easier to get them out of that trap.
Have any of you ever been in that situation?
Growing up in the valley, I had a dog who was trapped, actually as a child, and ended up one leg short. I've taken the trapper, the Anchorage Ski Drill Club puts on the trapping synapsin, what do you call it?
Yeah, around January of every year, we work with the Alaska Trappers Association and host a clinic, and it's really handy because the trappers bring all of their, it's kind of funny because the trappers are all dressed like trappers, and then the ski jurors have their Patagonia jackets on, and it's a cultural exchange. Uh-huh. But they lay out all of their gear and let us practice with it and give a nice lecture and show that video that's on the Fish and Game site.
I attended that. It was very valuable. You get to play with the traps without being in a stressful situation. And also, in our backpack now, we carry a muzzle. If there was ever a problem, our dogs would be muzzled while we work on the trap.
Oh, that's
a great idea. And to use the leash, sometimes you can use the leash to wrap around it to get some leverage to undo the trap. So that's obviously another reason to carry a leash.
Wow. There's no way to avoid the situation, or you don't really know where there's going to be a trap.
No, obviously. But I think the main thing for avoiding traps and things you can't see, like other wildlife, especially porcupines, there's been quite a few porcupine quillings lately, is to keep your dog on the trail. And that is, you know, actually training your dog at an early age to stick fairly close by, or to do the check-ins where they're looking back at you. And having a good recall, you know, the second my dogs jump off the trail and if I can't see them, I call them right back. I don't want them out of my sight.
Okay, well, that's a really good point. And seems like a super important issue that would be maybe a different way different people have of dealing with their dogs, because you'll be on the trail and you'll see some dogs are shooting off totally out of sight, and then they come back. And I would think, if that was my dog, well, what if the dog like sees something when it's out of sight that's interesting and then just keeps going? And then how are you ever going to find it?
Yeah, my dog has done that a few times. We joke, Brownie is the Chesapeake Bear Retriever. If she darts off of the trail and disappears, she's coming back with a bear. And for some reason, ever since she was about 6 months old, she finds bears and plays with them, and they all think she's a little weird. But but that's why now, if she starts to get the nose up in the air and starts to dart off the trail, I immediately call her before she leaves. So I don't want her doing
that.
That's
super scary. I mean, if you think about your dog being bringing a bear to you or getting stomped by a moose, any thoughts on that? Matisse, have you been in that sort of situation?
I've definitely seen angry moose and had to pull my dogs away, you know, make sure that they weren't in harm's way. But I think that a valuable thing is being aware of the area. Are there moose calving there? You know, is there a migration of birds? Is it trapping season? All these things matter and should be thought of before we go out and let the dogs off leash.
Absolutely. Great point.
Yeah. Well, and it's for the sake of the wildlife, too, in the late winter, the moose are stressed, and if a dog is chasing them around, that could be the difference between life and death for the moose, and certainly lots of other wildlife that could be stressed by dogs. And so I guess keeping the dog near where you are, and that's part of that voice control you were talking about.
Absolutely. You know, there's other birds, you know, migratory birds that are nesting. You don't want them to disturb those nests, you know, so there's a lot of things to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. A lot of other dogs out there, too.
Yes.
You're on the trail, two dogs meet. Are they going to be friendly? Are they not going to be friendly? All that.
That's a whole radio show on its own.
Uh-huh. Well, are there, I mean, commands that you have for that to get dogs to not bug each other?
Well, I think you were using on by to get your dog away. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions. A lot of people think, you know, if they yell out, hey, my dog's friendly, that's okay. And it's really not, because you don't know if the other dog is friendly. And again, you know, being aware of your surroundings, if you see another dog coming towards you, the first thing I do is I call my dog back if she's off leash. And I either put her on a leash and walk by, or I will have her do a sit stay on the side until they walk by. And it's not worth the stress. It could be a very friendly dog. They could love playing with each other, but that's not why I'm out there. I'm out there to hike. I'm not out there to play with other dogs. And I think there's a lot of other people that do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
what do you think, Claire? You're kind of nodding. How do you handle that situation?
Well, I admit it, I have the naughty dogs, so if I could recall them when another dog was around, I would. But
come
yeah, we
take my class.
Yeah, no, I mean, we do the same thing, although when we're in off-leash areas, most people who have their dogs off-leash, the dogs get along, and a lot of times when people have an aggressive dog, they keep them on leash, and that's actually when the problems occur, when our dogs are off-leash and want to go play with an aggressive dog that's on leash. So that is when we really pay attention and bring our dogs back and put them on leash. If the other dogs are off leash, we usually let them play, and we've very rarely had issues.
Well, and I realize I've got three good dog owners in the studio, so I shouldn't beat on you guys. But how many times have I been in the situation where, as you say, somebody says, "Don't worry, my dog's friendly," and they don't even pay attention, and then there's maybe a kid there who's terrified, you know, or an adult who doesn't like dogs who's really, really upset by the dog jumping up on him and running around him, and it really sort of can mar the whole experience.
Well, and your idea of a friendly dog and my idea of a friendly dog might be two totally different, you know, things. Mm-hmm. So we really, I mean, it really boils down to just respecting other people and other trail users, whether you're on a bike trail or, you know, a leashed city trail or even your sidewalk in your neighborhood. It's about just being respectful of other people.
Yeah. And you, Robin, and you, Matisse, have both volunteered or worked at the animal control. What are the, before we go to the break, what are the rules about controlling your animal? I mean, when you can have it on leash and when you can have it off? Yeah, they're pointing at each other.
Well, Robin actually worked there. I volunteered, so I'm not too familiar with the code, but I do believe it. If you do not have complete 100% vocal control, then your dog is supposed to be on leash. And leashed areas of Anchorage, there are off-leash areas. Lots of them, actually. You can find them online.
The dog parks.
Yeah, dog parks, and even some of the entrances, like over off of Muldoon, there's an entrance to, is it Gasline? Gasline Trail that's off-lead. So there's a lot of spots to explore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and voice control, you know, is one of those things that's a little gray area, but ideally, your dog should just be on a leash unless you really know that you can control your dog. I mean, in some situations, I will not let my dog off leash, even though I know I can trust her 100%. I can't trust other people 100%. Mm-hmm. And it really all boils down to really protecting your own dog and making sure you're there for them.
So when you say 100% voice control, you mean like regardless of what's happening.
Exactly.
The dog is going to do exactly what you say.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
If someone's walking down the trail holding a big piece of steak.
Yeah.
Yes.
Will it come back?
Yes.
From my observations, there's not many people who have that level of voice control.
You'd actually be surprised. You know, there are a lot of tips and tricks that mm-hmm. you can work with. You know, really the only problem I have with my dog Brownie is bears. I can't call her off of a bear. That's my only bad spot.
Right.
Now my other dog Chewbacca.
Major one, by the way.
Yeah, it is a major one. That's why I get her before she goes.
Right.
And that's really a key to a good recall is being aware of your surroundings. And before your dog gets to the point where they're close enough to smell that steak that person might have, mm-hmm. you're calling your dog back before
first.
That.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So really it's about tricking your dog sometimes.
Yeah.
And modeling the behavior. Our dogs are terrified of moose because whenever we see a moose, we freak out. And so whenever they see a moose, they come right back to us. So I don't.
Yeah.
That's kind of luck, I guess, that we train them to be afraid of moose. But uh-huh. that's helpful.
All right. Well, there's so much more to talk about. In the second half, I want to get into how you put together a trip with your dog. You know, what kind of things do you want to think about to make sure your trip is successful? Camping with dogs, you know, wintertime distance trips with dogs, a lot of our outdoor activities begin with long car rides. And how do you deal with your dog in that situation? And then we also have to talk about doggy do because there's an amazing amount of waste, to use a nice word. And just because you're away from city streets doesn't mean that that's not an issue. So all that in the second half with my three guests, Claire Ross, who's the president of the Anchorage Ski Drawing Club, Matisse Riley with Straw for Dogs, a nonprofit here in town, and Robin Langley with Alaska Dog Sports. But first, we are going to take a quick break. We're dipping into the Iditarod archives today for a report that we're going to hear. Lack of snow and bear race course made this year's Iditarod one of the toughest on record for both canine and human athletes. KUAC's Emily Schwing filed this report. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth.
There isn't a veteran Iditarod musher who doesn't agree this year's was one of the toughest in the race's 42-year history. Allie Zirkel is a 14-time finisher. This year, she says the challenges between Anchorage and Nome were endless.
Every day has been harder than the next day. Every day has been harder.
Early on, the Happy River steps cracked sleds, snapped gang lines, and left mushers bruised. The run through the Dalzell Gorge and over the Farewell Burn forced a dozen teams to scratch in a single day. Teams faced long stretches of snow-free trail in the Alaska Range between Kaltag and Unalakleet and along the Bering Sea coast. But it was a fierce Arctic wind that really shook Allie Zirkel on her final run to Nome.
That was the most challenging couple hours of my life dog mushing. And that was very touch and go as far as whether I was going to make it to safety or not with my dog team.
Safety is the last checkpoint on the trail. The irony of its name isn't lost on Zirkel. She says hurricane force winds could have easily blown her petite sled dogs straight into the inky, roiling waters of the Bering Sea.
For some reason, they keep saying there's no snow out here, but there was a ground blizzard and you couldn't see. So there's snow somewhere. If a person were to stop out there, that was a life or death thing there.
At least two mushers did stop as the wind howled. Jeff King's dog team got stuck for more than 2 hours just outside the last checkpoint on the trail. Hugh Neff's team hunkered down overnight on thick glare ice outside White Mountain. Eventually, both scratched from the race. Mitch Seavey, who finished third and won last year, half-joked that he'd have to write a book about how he got his dog team down the trail.
There's 1,000 different things that happen, you know. One particular instance, we were trying to cross a sloping section of glare ice, and the wind was blowing so hard from our right that one couldn't stand up on a normal day, much less on glare ice, and caught the sled, and the sled took off drag the entire team 100 yards backwards.
CV's son Dallas won this year, claiming a second championship. It's likely the two will return to defend what's become a family tradition. But things are different for Martin Boozer. He's run the race 31 times, more than any other musher. His arrival in Nome was extremely emotional. After a tearful greeting with his lead dogs at the finish line, Boozer hugged his wife, Kathy, for a long time.
Yeah. You don't have to ever do this again if you don't want to.
Boozer is disappointed in his performance as a musher. He says he doesn't believe he did well by his dogs.
I've been out of control for so long. I can't balance. I can't do anything. I just can't steer a sled. I keep wrecking and falling and can't do the dogs justice. That's what's so bad.
Despite his long-lived mushing career, it's unclear if he'll come back to the race.
I never say never.
The same question came up for another longtime veteran. More than once, Sonny Lindner has commented about retiring from the sport, but this year he says it's official.
Well, I started in 78.
He's finished the race 21 times. He says this year's run was reminiscent of them all.
Well, it had little parts of all of them. The bad parts, I think.
With that, Lindner Ready? Climbed on his runners, called to his dogs, and took off out of the finish chute for what very well may be the last time in a career that spans nearly as many decades as the race itself. On the Iditarod Trail, I'm Emily Schwing in Nome.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're back. My name is Charles Woolforth, and we are talking today about bringing your dog along. So many dogs in Anchorage. I sometimes think there's more dogs than there are human beings, and everyone likes to take them out to do what you like to do, you know, having fun in the mountains or whatever. I don't know if people take dogs kayaking. I wouldn't be surprised. And certainly we take our dog on the boat. That's how we get to the cabin, and that's the doggy heaven when she can run around without worrying about being on the leash or really anything else but her own devices. And I have three super dog people here in the studio. Robin Langley is with Alaska Dog Sports, trains dogs, trains people to be good dog owners. Thanks for being with us, Robin.
Thank you.
Matisse Riley is also a dog owner and is with the nonprofit Straw for Dogs, which helps people treat their dogs right in the wintertime. Thanks for being with us, Matisse.
Thank you.
And Claire Ross is the president of the Anchorage Ski Touring Club. And Claire, I wanted to find out a little bit about how you teach a dog to be a good ski touring dog. I mean, this is where the dog is pulling you along on your skis. And I've tried it with a big, powerful dog, and it was kind of mind-blowing about how you just zoom along. It's kind of intimidating. How do you get the dog to kind of go right there where you want it to go and to be good at this?
Well, I recommend learning how to ski first before you put a dog on. I did not do that when I very first learned 15 years ago. We had a lot of crashes, and the dog got a little bit freaked out about ski joring. So be a competent skier. Skate skiing is the way we all do it. You could do it classic skiing, but it's a lot easier with skate skiing. And then a lot of dogs just take to it. We always teach a dog to ski jore with a group of other people who are ski joring, and they kind of see what the other dogs are doing. And luckily the dogs that we've had since my first dog have all just seen the other dogs, got it, put their head down and go. And then the Ski Jore Club has clinics. We have a couple of beginners clinics every year with a classroom session and then a practice session out with members of the Ski Jor Club come and ski jor so the beginners can have someone to follow and set an example for their dogs.
So how do you get the dog to, like you said, learn to go by another, like if you're in a race, you might have to pass another skier, right? Or
yeah, you know, it's been amazing with both of our dogs how much they get what a race is. You know, they can be goofballs when we're out hiking and running all over the place, but as soon as we put them in that harness and they're on the start line, they tuck their head in and they just go, and they're so focused, and they see another dog and they just go right past them. Not everyone has that luck. There are a lot of tangles up on the races, on the trails. So always be prepared to draw the line in and bring them closer to you so you can avoid getting wrapped around somebody. Mm-hmm.
So are there training techniques for like getting them to go by and to getting them to stop? I suppose that would be important.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the more experienced ski jurors do G and Ha. Uh-huh. Our dogs, we just have a good connection with them, and we just kind of go and it all works out. Uh-huh. But they'll teach some of those tips in the beginner's classes. And a lot of it is having a more experienced dog that's already trained, and you can put them up together, two dogs on one person, or one person with the more experienced dog ski-joring ahead of the new dog. And they're pretty smart creatures. They pick up a lot by watching what the other dogs are doing.
So what kind of equipment do you use to attach the dog to the skier?
We have ski jor belts that are all like rock climbing belts, and they hook around your legs and your waist so that they used to have just waist belts, and those will rise up on your body and then end up jerking your back. And then the line has a bungee within it so that when the dog starts and gets off really fast, it doesn't jerk you. Mm. And then there's so many different kinds of harnesses. There's the traditional ones you see that the mushing dogs use, the longer ones. And then there's the other ones that are the T-back or H-back that hook on a little bit higher up on their body. And different people have different theories about which ones are better or safer. We use both, and they both seem to work.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like equipment is pretty important in terms of taking your dog outdoors, and Matisse, you were talking about the kind of collar that you use for different situations and stuff like that, and wanting to make sure that people do use the right kind of equipment.
Absolutely. If you're going to get your dog outside, make sure you have the right equipment. Sometimes you see somebody with a training collar. Training collars are only meant for actively training and then should be taken off, not for pulling on a bicycle or a sled or ski joring. Harnesses are meant for those types of things, and they do make a variety. You can get them most anywhere, but they're different than a pulling harness is different than a comfort harness. So make sure that you do a little research before you decide to jump out into the woods and make sure you have the right tools.
Mm. Alaska Mill and Feed and REI are both very well stocked on all the different kinds of dog equipment.
Sounds like you need some knowledge too as to what you're gonna buy.
Yeah, there's such great stuff online. The Ski Jor Club has great links. You know, if you're interested in ski joring, there is stuff online about bike joring, taking your bike and your dog out together with a Springer, they call it, or whatnot. But again, using a training collar in those situations is the wrong tool to use, because it's meant to not pull, or to train the dog to not pull. So by using a training collar for a pulling exercise, it's just really confusing. And
doesn't
it's not
sound
good.
Like you should be pulling with a collar at all, though. That
no, exactly. Harnesses are meant for pulling.
And harnesses sort of go around the entire body. So just like you wouldn't want to have a backpack attached to your neck.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You'd rather have it attached to your body.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're going to have links, do have links to all the stuff we're talking about. There's a video that we talked about earlier about avoiding and dealing with traps. And then we have links to each of the organizations that we're talking about today. And you can find all that at alaskapublic.org. Just look for today's show about bringing your dog along, and you can find all that information. So, Robin, it seems to come back so much to training. And I know you do classes, and you feel like getting your dog to return is the most important thing you teach. What are the elements of training that that people need to know, or that if you want to sort of get your dog to be a more obedient dog, Sort of, how do you do it? Like, what's sort of step one? I know there's a lot to it, but
step one: have lots of cookies and good mm-hmm. treats. No, really, it's all about, you know, forming a relationship with your dog and having fun while you're doing it. Training, you know, back in the day used to be, I tell you something and you do it, and if you don't do it, I'm going to make you do it. And trainers have come a long way since then, and now it's about having fun, having that connection, using treats. You don't have to do that forever. You can wean yourself off of those. But really just having a good attitude and going in, properly socializing your dog with other dogs and people. If you are going to be a trail person and do trail work later and do hiking and everything, get your dog out while they're still young. You know, you don't want to all of a sudden have an 8-year-old dog and go, hey, let's go hiking for 3 days. You know, they're going to not be ready for that, you know. Mm-hmm. So starting early, you know, puppy classes are the best way to begin, or a beginner class. And, you know, teach all the basics, the sit, the down, the walking on a loose leash. But really a lot of it is practicing outside of that and learning, you know, and being honest with yourself about what you want your dog to do. You know, I require a lot more from my dogs than I think a lot of other people do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me that time is a really critical element here. People are very busy, and if you want to learn to play the piano, you realize, well, you're going to have to spend some time practicing.
Absolutely.
It's kind of the same thing with the dog, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. You know, I suggest people train their dogs the first year of its life, you know, taking classes, whether that's puppy class 6 times or puppy class beginner, advanced beginner, rally, you know, whatever. But it's that first year of the dog's life that's really critical. And even as young as 8 weeks or 10 weeks when you get your puppy, it starts right then. And, you know, it takes 10 minutes twice a day, really, you know, to, mm-hmm. to get that started in little bits throughout the day. It might seem like a lot, but the investment in that first 6 months to a year pays off huge for the rest of that 12 to 15 year life of a dog.
Mm-hmm. And I guess avoiding some of the things that you could train the dog unintentionally to do, bad behaviors like the chasing games, right? This
yes.
is my kids, like, chase the dog around and the dog will never come.
Yes.
I always think they want to chase.
Never chase your dog. In fact, I always, you know, in my recall classes, I always have fun by running away from the dogs, and everybody's amazed at how quickly the dog stops running away from you and turns around to chase you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you stop and it's a party because it was more fun, you know?
Right.
So there's lots of little ways to play with your dog while you're training your dog. And, you know, so they don't know they're being trained, but, you know, mm-hmm. again, we trick our dogs a little bit, but it's all in the name of fun.
Well, it sounds like conditioning is an issue, too, that people might not think about, that if your dog has been basically indoor in the backyard all summer long, and then you're going to go on a 10-mile hike, the dog might not be ready for it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, you wouldn't run off and do a marathon tomorrow. Your dog won't do the same thing. You got to mm-hmm. work up to it slowly, whatever it is.
It's kind of a double-edged sword. We joke because sometimes after the end of the ski drawing season, when our dogs are really in good shape, then they need to go out all the time to keep that up. So
yeah.
It forces us to take them out.
Yeah, I would imagine so. We keep you going. And yeah. It's very easy, especially you and I are avid skiers. The springtime, you kind of get soft and it's hard to get into running, which isn't nearly as much fun. Yeah, so the dogs kind of keep you going a little bit.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about camping and sort of doing the sort of the stuff that, or backpacking, and sort of going longer trips, and what kind of preparation is important for that sort of trip. And I guess you've got to drive to wherever it is you're going to be, and then you're going to have the dog, you know, carrying some amount of stuff. And then when you're out tent camping, I mean, you sort of have to figure out how the dog is going to live and not bring bears to you and all that stuff. Who wants to jump in on that? Matisse, have you done much of that?
Sure. Number one is, yeah, think about how the car ride's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Does your dog get car sick? Don't feed them right before the car. We mm-hmm. feed really early. If we're going early, we won't feed till we get there, depending on what the time is. But and also thinking about in between. So if you're camping and then you're going to be going to get pizza on your way back, is the dog going to be in the car in 80 degree weather? You know, what? How are you going to work the in between parts as well?
Right. So heat, being in a hot car is obviously very dangerous for a dog.
Absolutely. Even like Robin mentioned, even if they have just gone swimming, and, you know, we think that well, gosh, it's not that hot. It's 60, 70 mm-hmm. degrees in a hot car. That can become unbearable in no time.
And they're wearing a thick wool, thick fur coat for the
exactly.
most part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And even our short-haired dog seems to tolerate the heat less than our husky. So the coat doesn't even necessarily matter so much as, you know, her breathing, or that double coat is actually a cooling system as well. So that's why they recommend you don't shave a double coated dog in the summer. So once you get there, we think about where the dog going to sleep. Maybe bring a lightweight tie out so that you don't have to constantly worry about, you know, if you're cooking or something, you know where your dog is, if you're involved in other activities at the campsite.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you do, Claire, put a tie the dog out when you're camping, or how do you handle it?
Yeah. Let them run around for a while if we're paying attention to them, but then once we start cooking or when we're ready to settle down, tie them up so we don't have to worry about them going off and chasing a bear. Another thing we always do is have a first aid kit just for our dogs in case they get a cut on their paw, to have booties. And one time our dog got attacked by mosquitoes and she was completely swollen all over, and I thought we were gonna have to drive back to town and take her to the emergency vet, and a friend had heard that to give them Benadryl, so yes. I gave her a Benadryl, and that did the trick. So now I always have Benadryl with us on trips.
Yeah, doggy first aid kits are huge. I mean, we take them when we go out hunting or hiking or anything. I mean, because you never know what you're going to run into. And on multiple day trips, they're, you know, if they get into, you know, bad water, you know, because dogs are always drinking in puddles. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure, you know, you have some Imodium with you or some Endozorb, which is the doggy equivalent of Pepto-Bismol. And most vets will give you a couple of doses, you know. So if you do run into a problem, you can address it quickly.
You know, I would say in sort of the prosaic department, one of my biggest issues with having an outdoor dog in the wilderness is that she always seems to find some dead, disgusting thing and get it all over her.
Mine love like, it's, to roll in stuff.
Then it's a nightmare. You don't want to be anywhere near her, you know, and you don't really have the ability to wash the dog when you're. Have you ever run into that situation?
I think everyone has. There's not much you can do. You kind of get used to that smell, and you just hope it's the last day of your trip and not the first one.
We bring vinegar and dish soap.
Oh, really?
And that works pretty good to neutralize the smell of fish or whatever it might be. A little bottle of dish soap, an old bottle. We'll put some vinegar in there and some dish soap, and if we're around a water source, we can give them a little bath.
Oh, that's a great tip.
Wet wipes.
I've used the wet wipes, yes.
They don't quite do the trick.
No. But, you know, at least you get the crusty stuff off.
Yeah. we'll have to finish the gross part of the show here. You know, I remember having some hiking folks on the show who were complaining about the fact that the dogs are all winter long pooping around trailheads, and then in the spring it melts, and you're kind of like in this like everywhere. And I know in the wintertime maybe the dog poops and you don't see it, but I think a lot of people think if they're away from the streets, they don't need to pick up the dog poop. They can just leave it because there's so much of it out there.
Well, can I jump in here?
Yeah.
So I'm actually on the Scoop the Poop Committee for Anchorage, and it's one of my biggest pet peeves. It really is. My dogs always wear a backpack when we're hiking out in the woods, and I will actually make them carry their own. So it's kind of an easy way to get around that. You can buy a lot of different types of bags that reduce the smell a lot. If my dogs are far enough off of a trail where nobody's going to see it, I will leave it because, you know, obviously other animals do poop in the woods.
Right.
But, you know, really, if it's near a trail, that's just rude. It's gross. It's disgusting. Nobody wants to walk in it. Other dogs smell it. Other dogs can roll in it. What if your dog has a disease that you don't know about, or worms, or there's so many other, you know, issues there that it's a health concern. So so scoop the poop, pack it out. And don't be one of those people that bags it up and leaves it on the side of the trail and thinks you're going to come back and get it.
Yeah, you see those all the time, don't you?
Forget.
Yeah.
So just scoop it. It's not that big of a deal. If you have a dog, you have to do it anyway. So just suck it up.
Yeah. And it's you know, it's also for the water quality, it's an issue. You know,
absolutely.
There's all kinds of reasons it's an issue.
A huge issue. It's called a fecal coliform, and it's raising and getting higher and higher levels in the city, especially Campbell Creek and some of the other popular spots. But let's not do that to the, you know, the wilderness
backcountry,
too.
Yeah. Right.
So scoop it and take it.
Anybody else want to weigh in on that one? Thoughts of how to deal with it and make it a little bit less unpleasant?
It is just a habit, you know, and you make it easy. You bring your poop bags, you figure out a way to carry it out, and it's not a big deal. You know, double bag it if you're sensitive about it or whatever. But it's something that when you live in a populated area, you just have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have dogs and you might want to walk out in your flip-flops someday and you might not want to step in that. So thinking about other trail users and being polite is... It just makes sense.
Yeah. And if the dog's running loose, you kind of have to be kind of aware, paying attention.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, and one of the other things about poop is that you can tell so many different things about your dog's health that way. So, you know, think of it as a way to monitor your dog. You know, you can tell if your dog is dehydrated or if they're, you know, stressed. All of those things can come out. So it's kind of nice to know what's going on that way. So think of it as an experiment, and then it's not
Good
quite
point.
So gross.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah.
All right. So we've got a 5 minutes left or so, and I'd really like to hear about some great trip ideas and stuff that you guys have done with your dogs that was special and memorable. And you don't have to tell your favorite places. And I know everyone wants to keep that secret. But I mean, Robin, sounds like you've had some fantastic hunting trips, and sounds like you've done a lot of amazing stuff with your dogs. Sort of, what are some of your things that you've done that you just are super memorable, and it might inspire others to want to take their dogs out?
I don't know, hunting is a different kind of thing than camping. You know, we've done the backcountry. Now that we have kids, we do more car camping. Mm-hmm. And honestly, one of our favorite places to go with the kids and the dogs is just down to the Portage area. Mm-hmm. They've got the new bike trail down there. You can pack up the kids' bikes. They have lakes for swimming the dogs and fishing in. The glacier's right there.
Very nice.
Trails everywhere. Great campgrounds. So it's a really popular place, and it's really dog friendly. There's a lot of dogs out there. So that's one of our favorites for car camping. I can't give away the hunting spots.
No, I wouldn't ask you. Claire, you sounds like you've done some pretty ambitious trips.
We do a lot of the public use cabins, and you can ski into them in the winter, or bike or hike in the summer, and it's a great place to have dogs off leash because there aren't a lot of other people around, and those have been a great experience for us. Mm-hmm.
So you said that you took a really long trip
We took our dogs on our honeymoon. That's how important they are. We did a 2-month road trip down the Canadian Rockies and back up the West Coast. And actually, the Canadian Rockies are awesome because you're allowed to take your dogs on all the trails there if you have them on leash. And the U.S. national parks, you can't take dogs just about anywhere in there. So
really,
Canadian Rockies.
So you just have to leave your dogs at home if you're going to the national parks.
Yeah, you have to leave them in the car. So when we went through Yosemite and Yellowstone, we pretty much just drove through and didn't get to do any hiking.
Oh, bummer.
Because it was hot there, so we couldn't leave them in the car for very long. So, yeah.
Did you know that in advance?
Yeah, but we didn't. I mean, we were driving through. We didn't really have a choice.
Oh, that would be painful to just drive through Yosemite and not stop.
We're definitely planning a trip for ourselves back there without the dogs someday.
Well, I mean, that's it. You know, if you go somewhere without your dogs, it's unless you have some very friendly person who's willing to take care of them, boy, it's expensive to get somebody to board your dogs. I mean, that's another reason to take your dog on a wilderness trip,
yeah.
Right?
Because you can't afford not to. We don't love them that much. We're just too cheap to find alternatives to care for them.
So when you were on that long trip, the dogs sort of just slept in the floor of the car, and then you just went on hikes and...
Yeah, you know, it was a little hard on our healer, who's a homebody. She had to stay up all night to protect the van, so it was a little, in retrospect, it was a little bit stressful for her, but they loved going to new places and hiking, and they had a great time, too, being with us all day.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. That's what they want, isn't it? They want to have that social connection more than anything else.
Yeah.
So, Matisse, do you have any memories that you can share?
We do like to go out to the valley, Hatcher Pass. I mean, there's great trails all out there. We've gone out to Eagle River and the Nature Center. The yurts and stuff out there are really fun, easily accessible from Anchorage. There's a lot of great public use cabins like that. But we like to go out to Hatcher Pass, wide open terrain, a variety of terrain for our dogs who have a variety of abilities as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you, we were talking about this conditioning issue and making sure the dogs are fit enough to do what they're doing. Do you find that they're sort of inactive during the winter and then in the summer you're sort of increasing their activity level, or do you just not worry about that, or how does that work?
We're active all year round with our dogs, but I do see a lot of people who are like the weekend warrior types who, you know, they wintertime it's cold and icy, they don't want to go outside, but then come spring they want to go for a 12-mile walk with their dog, which is maybe a little much if the dog hasn't had regular conditioning. All our dogs were adopted as adults, and they were all totally able to be conditioned to do longer periods of walks. Most of them lived in areas where they were never exercised at all. And even our 10-year-old who came to us, a 10-year-old, has really developed great athleticism. She's a really great athlete.
Are these pound dogs, basically?
They're all adopted, yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of them did come from Anchorage Animal Care and Control, and one of them came through our outreach program through Straw for Dogs.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, when it seems that I'm interested in, I guess we don't have too much time left, but if someone wants to get a dog, there's a lot of decisions to be made about that. And we'd all like to adopt a dog, but when you look at sort of what's available at the pound, it's pretty limited at times.
Yeah, it seems to be a lot of the husky mixes and the black labs and
pit bulls.
And the pit bulls. And
tons
most of
pit bulls,
those
yeah.
dogs are just high energy dogs. And that's usually the reason they do get returned because people get a cute little puppy and they forget that they have to feed them and exercise them and they get turned in. So, you know, yeah, really research your breed, research what you do. Be honest with yourself. If you are a couch potato, be honest and just get a couch potato dog. Get yourself a bulldog, you know. I mean, they'll love you just as much.
And
it changes over at Anchorage Animal Care and Control every day.
So
they take in 5,000 animals a year.
So
it
just watch
varies.
That website, right?
Absolutely.
And that link is on ours at alaskapublic.org, where you can find stuff about all the stuff we've been talking about today on our show and bringing your dog along. And I don't want to forget to talk about some of the events that are coming up this summer for dogs. And Claire, I think you had some of that information.
Yeah, the Friends of Pets have the dog jog in late July, and they'll put it on their website, friendsofpets.org. And it's really fun. Just about every organization that works with dogs has a booth there. So there's training demonstrations and information. And then there actually is a run, like a 3-mile run.
There's a 1 and a 3-mile. So it's for all abilities.
So you run with your dog on a leash? Is that the idea?
Yes, this is an all on leash. There's a 1-mile trail and a 3-mile. So you can either run or walk it.
That sounds crazy.
It gets pretty wild.
Yeah. So we'll put that on our website. And there's also an awful lot of organizations and places you can get more information. We'll have your company, Alaska Dog Sports, on, Robin.
Absolutely.
What are some other spots people can go to get more information about being good dog owners?
Oh, definitely. Friends of Pets has some of the most, comprehensive information out there on everything. Animal Care and Control, I believe, has a lot of information and links. So that's another good place to go.
And the Ski Drawer Club has a good website at skidrawing.org.
All right. And then and your organization, Straw for Dogs, I assume you're looking for help?
Yeah, we're always looking for volunteers, foster homes specifically. And also, I did want to mention an event coming up August 17th. The Downtown Partnership is putting on their second annual Dog Days of Summer block party. We did it last year. It was really fun. So we're going to be there again this year.
So what does that consist of?
It's the same type of thing. It's a dog-centered event, so people can bring their friendly pets with them. There's all kinds of booths. There was some fun trick contest and that kind of thing last year.
All right. Everybody wants to show off their dog. Okay. Well, all those links will be at alaskapublic.org. And I want to thank all three of my guests. This has been fun. They turned my skepticism into belief. So,
are you going to adopt a big dog now?
Yeah, that's right.
Are we going to see you out there on the trails?
Maybe not. Well, you might with my little dog. But so Claire Ross, president of the Anchorage Ski Drawing Club, Matisse Riley from Straw for Dogs, and Robin Langley from Alaska Dog Sports. Thanks to all three of you for being here. This is fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
On the next week's show, we're talking about the Mayor's Marathon, which comes up at the solstice every year, a really big marathon. We have a lot of other marathon events happening in Alaska over the summer. So that will be our topic on next week's Outdoor Explorer. Thanks for joining us today. Our producer is Monica Gokey, and I'm your host, Charles Woolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.